From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, it's The Animal House, connecting you with everything that concerns the animal world. I'm Sam Litzinger. Later, a noted animal rescuer tells the story of a sanctuary she created with a unique mission. We visit a Japanese island with a cuddly distinction. And Dr. Gary Weitzman of the San Diego Humane Society answers your questions about pets and wildlife. First, euthanasia or contraception? That question is at the center of a serious disagreement about the welfare of various species of domestic and wild animals. And recent events involving giraffes and lions in a Danish zoo have added yet another level of complexity and emotion to this ongoing debate. Laura Moss is an editor and writer for Mother Nature Network. She's done a lot of reporting on this matter. She joins us now from Atlanta, Georgia, to help us understand the issue. Laura, thank you very much for joining us in the Animal House.
Thanks for having me.
I got to tell you, the killing of that giraffe at the Danish zoo, the Copenhagen zoo, caused a social media firestorm, didn't it?
Oh, very much so. And then recently they killed four lions and it just kind of set everything off again.
Do we know why they're doing this?
The giraffe is actually part of a conversation about whether euthanasia or contraception is better for zoo animals, of what constitutes a more natural life for them.
The question seems to be euthanasia versus contraception, and it looks like the Europeans have made the decision generally toward euthanasia. Is that a fair statement?
Yes. They believe that it's more natural for an animal to be allowed to reproduce and raise its young than to be on birth control. And then at the age at which the baby animals have matured and would start reproducing themselves, at that point, if their genes are already represented in the population, then the animals are euthanized.
But the problem is you end up killing the animals, right? And that's what's creating so much controversy.
Correct. And the way they view it, and it's not all European countries, to my understanding, Italy is actually illegal to euthanize zoo animals for these reasons. But they believe that this is more natural for the animals and that just like in the wild where only so many young would survive to that age, that they're just kind of replicating natural selection in a zoo environment. Whereas in U.S. zoos, what we do is we practice birth control. So chimpanzees take birth control much like humans do. Giraffes actually take it in their feed. Some animals have hormone implants, and this allows them to still live in natural social groups, but they're unable to reproduce. And so they don't have young that would be killed off.
Is there any indication that the European Association of Zoos and Aquariums is ready to change its thinking on this based on the reaction it got to the killing of the giraffes?
Not that I've heard. And I know that they're very proud of how transparent they are. So while other European zoos do practice euthanasia, they're not as public about it, whereas the Copenhagen Zoo sees it as a chance to kind of educate the public about what they do at the zoo and why it's more natural. And I know that in an interview recently, I think it was the zoo's director was saying that he didn't expect people to be so surprised or angry about killing off the lions because he figured what happened with the giraffe in February had enlightened them and showed them that what they were doing was the right thing.
I guess the argument could be made that if this were in the wild, if there were no zoo involved, that animals would in fact be killed and eaten.
Right. And with the giraffe that was killed in February at the Copenhagen Zoo, after he was killed, they publicly dissected him, and they saw that as a way to educate the public. And then the giraffe was actually fed to the lions, which is very natural in the wild. But from an American perspective especially, the idea of publicly dissecting an animal and then feeding it to animals in front of people is just it's a very disturbing concept to a lot of people.
Lots of questions still to be debated on this. Laura Moss is an editor and writer for Mother Nature Network. Thank you very much for being with us in the Animal House.
Hi, and thanks for having me.
There are three kinds of animals who come to the gentle barn. The first are those we nurse back to health so they can live a full, vibrant life. The second are those who came to us in the final stages of their life to die a dignified death surrounded by love. And the third are the animals who find their way to us to learn a life lesson. Katie had arrived at the gentle barn furious at the world. She'd been used and abused for so many years as a pony ride horse and had simply had enough and decided she hated humans. In her first weeks and months at the gentle barn, she'd reminded me of a wrinkled old lady with a cigarette hanging from her mouth who screamed expletives at anyone who passed. In horse, this translated as biting or baring her teeth. What she didn't know was that a life lesson awaited her. She was going to learn that not all humans were abusive and that there was love for her in this world.
That's the the voice of Ellie Lax, founder of the Gentle Barn Animal Sanctuary, which has saved the lives of thousands of animals since 1999. The Southern California nonprofit also provides safe haven for many at-risk teens and special needs children, and it's become an important destination for hundreds of thousands of animal lovers. Ellie's written a book, My Gentle Barn, which weaves together the story of how the barn came to be, what it is today, with her personal journey as well. Describe the Gentle Barn for us.
We have 170 animals. We have horses, cows, pigs, sheep, goats, chickens, turkeys, peacocks, llamas, dogs, cats, a donkey, and a parrot. We work with inner city at-risk kids. We work with special needs kids. We do school field trips, Girl Scout troops, Boy Scout troops, homeschool groups. There's a whole array. And of course, we have a big volunteer program. So there's a whole array of people coming from all over Los Angeles to come and be with the animals. And typically, most people have never met a cow before. They've never pet a pig before. Some of them have met horses, but certainly no one has ever cuddled a turkey before. So the experience of the Gentle Barn is one that really is just once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Do you remember the actual moment when you said, I can do this, I can create the Gentle Barn?
Yeah, the Gentle Barn was my dream since I was 7, and it kind of started as a temper tantrum to my parents. I would yell at them, you'll see, when I grow up, I'll have a huge place full of animals, and I'll show the world how beautiful they are. And so it started from that temper tantrum as a 7-year-old. But of course, I didn't exactly know how to get land or money or raise farm animals, so it took me a very, very long time to do it. And the exact moment that the Gentle Barn actually came to be a reality was about 15 years ago when I discovered a petting zoo I had never seen before. And I went in just to kind of check it out because there were so many animals. And what I saw there, I'll spare you the details, but there was a lot of abuse and neglect going on there. And sick to my stomach, I was running for the door and there was a goat that was blocking my way. And she was in terrible shape and looked like she was about to drop over any minute. But what was different about her than all the other animals is she looked me right in the eye and she seemed to be asking, please, can you help me? Can you get me out of here? And I was so struck by the intensity of her gaze that I literally could not leave her there. And I asked the owner of the petting zoo if I could have her, and they said no. And I asked her if I could buy her, they should name their price. And they said, no, lady, just get out of here. But I just couldn't leave her. So I told them, look, I told the goat I was going to help her, so I'm going to stay here till you say yes. And I stayed there for 12 days. And on the 13th day, the lady said, lady, take the goat and get the heck out of here. So I brought Mary home, and I called the vet out, and we trimmed her overgrown toenails, and we removed her tumors, and we gave her vitamins and minerals, and I gave her lots of love. And months later, she was bounding around the backyard as happy as can be. And it felt so good to not only be able to really heal an animal, but I didn't have any parents to take her away from me or anybody to tell her that I couldn't. So I was so elated to have done a rescue job to its completion that I went back to the petting zoo and I started bringing animals home from there that were sick or crippled or needed help. And it was about a few months after that I was looking out my window to my very small backyard full of animals. And I said to myself, oh my God, I think I just started the Gentle Barn.
You have expansion plans. I think every state, but maybe every county in the United States could use a Gentle Barn as well.
Yeah, that's our end goal, is to have Gentle Barns in every state around the country and then go global. Our vision is we desperately want to get every single person in the world to be able to hug a cow, give a pig a tummy rub, cuddle a turkey, and learn that we are all the same, even though we look different.
Ellie Lax is founder of the Gentle Barn Sanctuary in Santa Clarita, California, and author of the new book, My Gentle Barn. Thank you very much for being with us in the Animal House.
Oh, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
In a few moments, Dr. Gary Weitzman will join us with answers to your questions about pets and wildlife. First, let's meet our animal of the day. This lime green amphibian has transparent skin covering its abdominal region, which makes its heart, liver, and gastrointestinal tract visible through the skin. Can you guess the name of this species? We'll have the answer at the end of today's program. Next week in the Animal House.
Zombies are bees that have been infected by a particular kind of fly that specializes in parasitizing bees. Those parasitized honeybees act strangely and have sort of zombie-like behavior.
We hear about the unusual predicament of an insect and its flight of the living dead next week in the Animal House.